Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, got it! Got it! Got it! 33! Center field, Marsh leaps, and he got it!
It normally.
High fly ball, deep left field. Oh, 27 does it again
for this year.
Wall sends it well out to left center field, and it's gone. He went to Jared.
Way
diving catch, Joe Adell.
This is Brandon Marsh for Los Angeles Angels Baseball. You listen to All Angels Podcasts.
And welcome to another edition of the All Angels Podcast. I am your host, Daniel Garcia. So obviously, we're at the All-Star break. We are recording this right after the Home Run Derby, where Juan Soto takes the crown. Some very cool highlights. You know, obviously, Albert getting out of that first round definitely went over my 5.5, but definitely was showing his age a little bit. Definitely looked really tired after that first round, and honestly looked really surprised that Schwarber didn't beat him in that first round. It seemed like everyone was really excited to see him advance except for Albert, but Juan Soto got him in the semis, and obviously Juan Soto took it over young phenom, and this guy was putting on a show in the very first two rounds. That is Julio Rodriguez from the Seattle Mariners, and I really thought going into that final matchup he was going to take the crown, but Juan Soto ends up winning the 2022 Home Run Derby, and we'll see what happens next year. He obviously went last year, and he competed against Otani in the first round, beat Otani in the first round, competed this year, now won it. Now let's see if he goes and up to Seattle next year, where the All-Star Game is going to be, and tries to defend his title. I know a lot of guys will do it a couple of times, but it does look really taxing. It does look really tiring, because it does seem like you are swinging for the fences quite a bit. So we'll see what happens next year. And like I said, the All-Star game next year up in Seattle, I think that's going to be a very nice place to see the game. It's a great stadium. Weather's not going to be an issue, obviously, with Seattle. The temperatures are always seem to be nice and chill compared to what it looked like out there in LA, where it looked like it was pretty warm today. So there's a bunch of other news that came out of this press conference today, or press conferences today at the All-Star game, but we'll get to that after my interview with Rhett Bollinger from MLB.com. I talked to another beat writer. I'm getting a lot of, good responses. I'm getting responses about the Jeff Fletcher interview, which I really like. I really like your guys' opinion, and I like to hear your guys' opinion, and honestly, I would like to hear it more. So if you guys are listening to this podcast and the Jeff Fletcher podcast and have a question or anything about what they said, agree, disagree, make sure you call in on the voicemail line to let me know. We'll play it right here on the next podcast. The number is 951-384-0810, and I will put it in the description of this podcast. But like I mentioned, I'm getting a lot of good feedback from the Jeff Fletcher interview. I'm interested to hear what you guys think about what Rhett has to say. I didn't ask him as much Otani stuff because I think I got a lot of that from Jeff, and I really talked to Rhett more about other Angel stuff, the coaching issue. We get a David Fletcher update and all that stuff. So make sure you listen again. If you have any questions or comments about the last two interviews with the two beat writers from the Angels, make sure you call our voicemail line at 951-384-0810. Now, here's our interview with MLB.com's beat writer, Rhett Bollinger. I'd like to welcome back a past guest, friend of the podcast. Obviously, he's been here a number of times. He writes for MLB.com. He is the Angels beat writer, and that is Rhett Bollinger. Rhett, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, always a fun time, and this is a good time. I just had Jeff Fletcher on, talk about the baseball season, his book. Now I want to have you on, same thing, talk about, obviously the first half of the Angel season. I don't think you have a book coming out, so I guess there's one thing we don't have to talk about. But anyways, so the first half, it's over, it's complete. As we record, the first half is, I guess, unofficially over because it's not exactly halfway through the season. But we're at the break, and the Angels are struggling. Last time I talked to you, it was kind of weird. It was right in the beginning, I believe, like three or four games into that 14-game losing streak, right before they went to New York and all the stuff that kind of followed behind it. From that point to this point, I mean, last time we talked, we were excited, or I was excited about a playoff run. Now it looks like they need to move heaven and earth to even try to get close to that. What has changed in the meantime? What has changed from last time we talked to now?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I remember last time talking to you, thinking they might even be buyers of the deadline and how they kind of reinforce this team because they were still playing pretty well at that point. And then that losing streak hit and just that whole stretch, you know, they had that stretch against a bunch of tough, you know, tough teams with the, you know, the Blue Jays and the Yankees, and they went to Philly when they started to get hot and, you know, had to come home, and then, you know, the Red Sox and Mets and all that. And
yeah,
they had a 19-game stretch against tough teams. They went 2-17, which pretty much put them out of contention just from that one stretch right there. And a lot of it was just, it seems like, you know, the offense has been, I think, to me, has been the biggest culprit over this time period, just because they're averaging right around 3 runs per game, second fewest runs in the majors over the last, like, 55 games, just one run better than the A's, who obviously aren't really even trying. And obviously, you know, the bullpen's been a struggle as well, not protecting late leads. The rotation's been okay. It's hard to fully blame them. Obviously, Ohtani has been the one guy who actually can get wins on this roster whenever he pitches. So it's just a combination. Whenever they pitch well, they seem like they can't hit. Whenever they actually do score some runs, it seems like they don't pitch well in that game, or they blow a late lead. So pretty much anything that could possibly go wrong, it seems like it goes wrong for them, except for when Ohtani starts. Other than that, you know, it's almost like a guarantee they're going to find a way to lose. And it's just, you know, it's tough to watch. And I feel for the fans and for the players, too. Obviously, they are working hard and all that. Like they consistently say, they're working hard to try to fix this, but nothing so far has been able to change anything, really.
And you mentioned, it's like every time Ohtani's on the mound, he is the difference maker. They've won his last, at this point, I believe, like, what, 5 starts or six starts in a row. But it's not like Ohtani's never in the lineup the other days. Like, obviously, he's not pitching, but he's still a DH every other day. Is there, like, a certain different, like, just a vibe near the in the clubhouse when he is on the mound compared to where he's still in the lineup, but he's not on the mound?
Yeah, I think, I'm sure, a little bit. I'm sure there's more confidence when he's out there. And part of it's just, he's just not giving up any runs too, right? I
mean, yeah.
Starts, I think he's only given up like 2 runs. So as long as the offense even shows like a pulse that day and can get a couple runs, and sometimes he does it himself, you know, that 2-run triple the other day.
Right.
Sometimes he provides his own offense because all he really needs over this stretch has been a few runs. And with the other pitchers, you know, even if they pitch well, I know Demers has had a couple of good starts and they're not really anything to show for it. So it's just one of those rough stretches here. And it's just been going on for a long time. I mean, I wrote my story yesterday that, you know, over the last 55 games, they're 15-40, which is pretty amazing considering, you know, leading up to that, they were 11 games over 500 and they were in first place. So they, you know, played almost a quarter of the season of pretty good baseball. I mean, now even more than a quarter of the season they've played. The worst baseball, or the worst, you know, baseball in the majors. You know, they have the worst record since that stretch, and even worse than, like I said, the A's, who really haven't really been trying much. They're right. Definitely in a rebuild mode, whereas this Angel team had high hopes, and clearly moving on from Joe Maddon didn't really make a difference. They have a much worse record, you know, with Nevin so far. You got to wonder about the coaching staff at this point and if they're going to make any changes there, if that would make a difference or not. I mean, they've, you know, trying to shuffle up the back of the lineup. You know, they've brought up Stefanik. They've, you know, signed VR. They tried to, you know, mix up different things. Adele's up now. They had Monty Harrison up for a little bit. We see McKinnon. They've tried different guys, but, you know, and Renjifo's played a little better for sure, but nothing's really changed. The bottom of the lineup still struggles. They're still not really getting enough runs. Even the top of the lineup, you know, Ward hasn't really been the same player he was early in the year. Trout, same thing, a lot of strikeouts. Now he's hurt with the back. Ohtani has still been pretty solid, but not really the home run numbers we used to saw like last year. So yeah, it's just been a really rough stretch here for a long time.
Do you think this team would be in a different situation if they just rode out that losing streak with Madden and kept Madden, and Madden was still the manager at this point? Or do you think this was something that, you know, obviously you can never tell the future, but it was probably just inevitable. Something like this was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think just it's not all Madden's fault. I think even if Madden would have stuck around, I don't know how much things would be that much better either. Just, I think it's more of a issue with the players and just the production. And the only difference might have been was if Madden was manager, I don't think they probably would have had that brawl.
Well, that's half the fun already.
Yeah, and that, but that was, you know, a costly brawl for them in a sense that, you know, they lose their, even if just the interim manager for 10 games, which is a long time, and all the other coaches, and just having all these, you know, managers over that stretch. And then, of course, Archie Bradley breaks his elbow and he's out for, you know, a couple months. So, and then the Mariners, of course, have gone the other way and they've been playing great ever since the brawl. So, yeah, so I do think, I wonder if that would have changed things. I don't think Madden probably would have directed them to do what they did. It doesn't really seem like his style as much. But yeah, I mean, I think no matter who was managing this team right now, they were going to struggle.
And a lot of people, I'm sure you see it on your Twitter feed and on your comments, is the coaching staff. And you kind of mentioned it a little bit about, you don't know, you know, if they're safe. They are, you know, came in with Joe, everyone, but Tim Montgomery. I think Tim Montgomery was working with Perry last year. So I guess, is he maybe the only guy that's safe because he has that connection?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to make full-scale coaching changes like during the middle of the season in terms of like the whole staff or anything.
Right.
But certainly they could, though, move on from, you know, Matt Wise or even Jeremy Reed if they want to do that. You know, kind of sacrifice the hitting coach or pitching coach is the way things are going. Maybe that could happen in season. But, yeah, I mean, this offseason you got to figure they're probably going to clean house and figure out what they want to do with their next manager. I mean, you know, Nevin certainly is going to be in that mix. I don't know if, you know, he's done much to really improve his chances of getting it at this point. But, you know, he's handled the media well, and I know the players really do like Nevin a lot. So you never really know what will happen with that. But I do expect with Perry, you know, he'll have his chance now to hire his own manager. You know, he's one of those guys that's, you know, been around, and Madden was not the guy that he hired. You know, Perry came in after that. So I think this gives him a chance to kind of define his own staff. Like I said, Ray Montgomery was added from the front office to the bench coach. But you got to, you know, even he might go back to the front office. You never really know how things are going to go with that coaching staff right now. Because really, if it continues to go this way the rest of the year, especially, nobody really would be safe at this point.
With all the baseball that you've seen and covered, is it something as simple as just fixing the hitting coaches or fixing or changing the pitching coaches and hitting coaches to make a team click? Or, you know, is that something that's a small percentage of how well a team does?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a smaller percent. I think the bigger scale thing is just the fact that they really haven't develop players in the minor leagues as well. You know, they haven't really had guys come up through the minors and come up and have an immediate impact, you know, the way it seems like other clubs do. It seems like the guys that come up for the Angels come up and really struggle, you know, right away. Even top prospects like, you know, we've seen Adele go through a lot of struggles, and even Marsh offensively this year. We know he's a great defender, but the adjustments just have not really been there offensively. And then, you know, even on the pitching side, it wasn't a great look that, you know, Reed Detmers went down to AAA and kind of fixed his slider, and it took a chance, you know, a trip to the minor leagues to fix that instead of something they could do up in the major leagues. And Peguero, you know, when he was tipping pitches, and Trout wasn't obviously very happy about that. It wasn't a good sign. The rest of the, you know, coaching staff couldn't figure that out. So I do think obviously they do make an impact, but I think the issues for the Angels go deeper than that at this point. And I think it's more of an organizational thing and just a player development issue that they got to fix going forward. And then they've been trying to, and obviously last year, drafting all pitchers, you know, 20 of them. I've heard good reviews on a lot of those pitchers. A lot of the Athletic came out with their most recent prospect rankings, kind of praised them for that draft. You never know how that'll pan out, especially, you know, with pitchers, but it does seem like the early returns have been pretty solid on that at least. So to me, it's more of kind of developing those guys. But you're right, at the big league level, a lot of these younger guys aren't getting better. And if anything, they're kind of regressing and still making the same mistakes. You know how you can beat them with high fastballs, and there's just, even as a fan, you can kind of know how to, if you know how to hit the guys out as a fan, probably not a good sign for that.
Is it too soon? I know he's only been in, this is going to be his second draft as we record, but is it too soon to judge Perry as far as his job as GM? Or do you think there's enough sample size as free agent signings and stuff like that to start judging his case as being a good GM?
I think it's a little too early at this point. I mean, it's definitely been a couple of years here. But so far, you know, he's definitely made some good moves, but also some mistakes, you know, especially with, you know, it's tough, you know, a lot of the trying to build back the pitching staff. It seemed like the bullpen was a great area to invest. And I thought the signings made sense at the time. And sure enough, they haven't really worked out. Even Raisel Iglesias has been consistently one of the better closers in baseball. He got, you know, a big contract and has really struggled. You know, so Aaron Loop struggled all year pretty much. Ryan DePara has been kind of up and down. And then even the, you know, Lorenzen was pretty good for a while. Then he seems to, you know, now he's hurt. And, you know, Syndergaard has been pretty solid, but his ERA is right at 4 now. So he hasn't really been, like, spectacular or anything. So the moves he made in the offseason were geared to fix the pitching staff. And it has been a little better than last year, but clearly the offense needed to be upgraded. And that didn't happen. And he knows it's an issue now. Because the offense is really scuffled here for, like I said, the last like 50 games or so. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think it was a great offseason looking back now, but I do think that it's still a little early, you know, to judge him fully just because he's only been here for 2 years.
With the next big date on the calendar being the trade deadline in early August, the Angels currently sit at 39-53. It's hard to see them being any kind of sellers or buyers, more so they're probably going to lean more towards the selling side of it. Do you feel that same way, or how do you think that time period is going to play out?
Yeah, and I think it'd make more sense to be sellers at this point, but the question is, who can they really sell? I mean, they don't really have that many pieces that are going to be that attractive to other teams. You know, Noah Syndergaard is probably their biggest trade chip of the veteran guys they have. But like I said, Syndergaard with a 4 ERA hasn't really been striking out that many guys. And the fact that, you know, he's coming off Tommy John, so there's no real guarantee he's going to be available in the postseason for a contending team either. So that might kind of limit his value. And the fact that he's making, you know, he may have, what, he get a $21 million contract, so he's probably owed like $6, $7 million the rest of the year too. So unless they ate some of that money, they might not get much back. So otherwise, you know, they could decide to move on from like Joe Adell. But even then, what would be the point in terms of his value is definitely not very high right now. And they just don't really have that many other pieces. And I really don't see a scenario where they trade Shohei Ohtani. I know that's been talked about. I just think that he means too much to them, both on the field and off the field. I don't think Artie would want to sign off on a trade for Ohtani. And really, I don't know what you could get back that would really be worth it in a sense, because I know that, you know, you get a year and a half of Ohtani, but even other teams, you know, would be wary just because of the, you know, injury concerns of Ohtani and fitting them in their own rotation and also just these teams and knowing, you know, would it be possible for them to re-sign him too? So I don't really see an Ohtani trade happening. And like I said, they don't really have a big piece to move that's going to bring them back a bunch of guys to rebuild that farm system either. So I think they're kind of in a tough situation and we'll kind of see what they end up doing. But I don't really see them making much of a splash there at the deadline.
And it seems like the Angels are always kind of put in this situation where they're never really good enough to go out and make this huge buy or even have enough prospect to make this huge buy, but they're never really bad enough to where it's like a full-on fire sale, Oakland A's style, let's just start all over again. But isn't that something that, I don't know if it would work, but I guess you can't really do that when you have people like Mike Trout and, as of right now, Shohei Ohtani on the roster.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I mean, they've never really gone into a rebuild because of Trout being their main star. And, you know, even before that, trying to win with Trout and Pujols and things like that. And now, obviously, with Trout and Rendon and Ohtani, they just never really could do a full rebuild. And right now, they're not going to do it either. And like I said, they don't really have the players to sell off to even really do one either. I mean, the only guy that would really be, you know, sparking a rebuild would be Ohtani. But even the return for Ohtani, I don't think would be enough to really have a full rebuild. I don't know that you could get enough value in return for a guy like Ohtani who's able to do, you know, both things so well. You know, you even look at what the Dodgers did last year, you know, when they got Trey Turner for a year and a half and they got, you know, Max Scherzer, they gave up, you know, a good catching prospect and they gave up a pitching prospect who might be a reliever. He might not even be a big leaguer in Josiah Gray. No one really knows yet, but Ruiz looks like he might be pretty solid. So would you really want to trade Ohtani for, you know, maybe a good position player and a wild card? I don't know that that's really worth making that kind of a trade. So it's this hard situation for them. They're always, like I said, they never really ever rebuild. But part of the issue is just they haven't really drafted well over the last however many years. And if they would have those guys in the draft, you know, it would make a big difference. They just haven't really been able to do that. Even, you know, our MLB pipeline crew had to rate the best draft pick by the Angels over the last decade. And the best pick was David Fletcher, you know, and Fletcher's a nice player, but he's struggled now for the last over a year, and he's been hurt most of this year too. I know he's coming back here at the end of the month, and hopefully he finishes strong for his own sake. But I mean, it just shows you they just haven't really been able to draft much over the last decade. And hopefully, you know, under Perry, that's a big emphasis, and we'll see if they can, you know, if those guys will pan out. But that's also still kind of to be determined.
So you bring up Jeff Fletcher, David Fletcher, wrong Fletcher.
Jeff Fletcher, buy his book, though, by the way.
Yeah, we just talked to him about the book. Buy the book.
I talked about it every day with him at work. He basically brings it up unprompted, and he puts the book out for little photo ops. And
does he travel with it now?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's got a bunch of copies of it. And today, too, I believe his book signing is going on now. It's a week on Sunday morning in Tustin. So hopefully someone's over there for him buying some books. I hope so for him.
Yeah, great book. Definitely check it out. Again, like I mentioned on the last podcast, had him on. Great. I really enjoyed that. But David Fletcher, the other Fletcher, the Fletcher on the field, he is coming back at the end or after the All-Star break. But and you mentioned before, Luis Trujillo seems to be kind of turning a little bit of a corner right now for the Angels. So when Fletcher comes back, who do you feel is like the odd man out in that infield?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think right now I feel like it'd be Jonathan VR. I mean, he's really not really added too much offensively, and he's made three pretty costly errors too at third base. So to me, I'd probably have Fletcher play in the infield with Stefanik and Renjifo as kind of the three starters, although Stefanik really is kind of starting to slump again too offensively. But you might as well see what you have in him and maybe play Fletcher a little bit at third and keep Renjifo at short and then play, you know, Stefanik at second. You can move it around too, and if Fletcher is still dealing with any of the hip injury or anything, you can play him at second more if it's easier on him, because Stefanik can move to third, or even Renjifo's been playing a little bit of third the last couple days here too. So I think those will be the three primary infielders, at least in the start of it. They could obviously keep VR as a backup or maybe move on from him, or even, you know, if they could trade him for anything at the deadline, that would make sense too. I just don't know really what they'd really get back for him with the way he struggled this year. But yeah, and then obviously mix in Velasquez for defense. And then at some point, you know, Matt Duffy will be back from his back injury. And so you got to figure they'll send down David McKinnon for sure once one of those two guys are back. But yeah, Fletcher still got some time, though. I've heard I don't think he's going to come back until the homestand after the series against the Braves and the Royals. They really want him to kind of take some time at AAA and make sure he's feeling healthy and get his swing back. So it's cool for him because I think he gets to play against his brother, AAA Reno. And his brother Dominic's a really big prospect, a really good player for the Diamondbacks AAA team. So at least that'll be cool. Two Fletchers in the field, and then he'll be back there for the homestand. That's kind of what I've been hearing.
We can send Jeff down to Salt Lake and be two Fletchers on the field and one in the box.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
But so obviously Fletcher is somebody that the fans really like. You know, he's a fan favorite. You have Luis Renjifo, who has kind of felt like he's turning a corner, like I mentioned, and Rendon coming back next year. Obviously, that still means they need to upgrade the infield during the offseason, no?
Yeah, I would think shortstop would be another area. Again, they'd want to really upgrade. You know, obviously, and even maybe a backup corner infielder just because of the way that Rendon has been injury prone. And then the way that, you know, Walsh struggles against lefties, and really Walsh hasn't really hit the way that he was, you know, like he did last year in a sense either. This season. So I think a stronger player who could play first and third would make some sense. And then obviously a shortstop would be a key thing just because they don't really have a kind of a two-way type shortstop that can hit and field. You know, Velasquez is a great fielder but can't really, you know, hit. And then, you know, Fletcher seems like, you know, you could play Fletcher at short, but I think of him as more of a second baseman. And then we'll kind of see, you know, what they have in Renjifo. It has been a nice stretch for him. I do think he's putting himself firmly in the mix for next year. But the infield is definitely going to be an area they need to, you know, try to upgrade this offseason.
So we are at, again, the All-Star break right now. In your eyes, what is the biggest surprise, good surprise? Because I know there's probably a lot of bad surprises, but what's the good surprise that you've seen so far this year with the Angels?
Well, that's always tough right now with the way things have been going.
Yeah.
Let's see here. A good surprise. Eesh, it's just tough to even find too many positives in this. I mean, Renjifo's obviously been a positive in terms of the way he's played recently. You know, Jose Quijada has been really good out of the bullpen since he's been healthy. Not a huge surprise. Quijada finished pretty strong last year too. But you're kind of, you know, you're looking at this roster, you're kind of looking up and down and going, who's really been, you know, better compared to last year? And I mean, obviously Taylor Ward would be a big surprise. Like I said, the way that he started off the year, but he hasn't really been hitting the way that he was earlier. The last few weeks here, kind of coming back down to earth a little bit. But I would say overall, in terms of the actual performance for the season, I think that, you know, Ward, his production has probably been the biggest surprise on the team, and especially early on in the year, he was really a big part of that offense when they were clicking with him and, you know, and Trout and, you know, Rendon were healthy and Otani up there and Walsh was more productive. That was a pretty good top five to that lineup. But so far, you know, that hasn't really been the case. And obviously that bottom line has been really rough. So, it's tough to really find, much positives out of this. I mean, Sandoval had a nice first half. Got to give him credit for continuing to develop. Reed Detmers is starting to kind of show some stuff since going down with that fixed slider, showing why he was such a big prospect. I do think that Detmers could have a pretty good second half here. But in terms of positive developments, it's definitely kind of hard to find on this team with the way things have gone.
Then I'll flip it on you on the other side. Then this might be hard because there's too many to pick from. What is the biggest disappointment so far this year for the Angels?
I mean, I would have to say probably just the way the bullpen's fared. You know, just the fact that Iglesias has struggled so much and Loop too. Like I said earlier, DePere's been up and down. You know, Archie Bradley's been hurt most of the year with, now with the elbow thing, and before that, I think he went here to side. The bullpen was supposed to be the strength of this team. You know, they're even trying to make comparisons in spring training to 2002. With the Angels bullpen when they won the World Series, and that's definitely not a fair comparison. This has not been a good bullpen. So that's been a major disappointment to me, for sure, has been the bullpen. The rotation's been okay. I mean, I don't think it's been great, but it hasn't been the biggest issue. And then obviously the offense is really scuffled here. Trout with the strikeouts has definitely been he's obviously still having a strong year. Offensively, you know, a lot of home runs. His power is definitely up. But it does seem like that's kind of his big tool now is the power. He doesn't really, drive the ball in the gaps as much anymore or utilize the speed in that sense or put the ball in play as much. You know, a lot of strikeouts too. But he's still having a good year, but it hasn't really been the same type of Mike Trout player we've seen in the past. Rendon, of course, just another rough year and then, you know, another injury out for the season. That's turned out to be a rough contract so far. Still some time, obviously, to turn it around, and he's certainly had a strong track record before he came to the Angels, but really the last couple of years there's really been a struggle for him, and then to see him get hurt really does, you know, affect this team a lot, especially when you have that much money invested in him. To lose him for that much time and not really having much depth to, you know, replace him, that injury really hurt this team, and it was kind of right around the same time things started to go south here. So I do think that Rendon, it was another disappointment this year for sure.
Yeah, and it just seems like at the beginning of the year, we were excited as fan base. Oh, they finally fixed that bullpen issue. But obviously, like you mentioned, it hasn't played out that way. Is that just kind of the nature of spending money on, especially relievers in free agency? Or is this something, you know, that the Angels screwed up so-and-so's arm kind of deal?
It's a good question. I mean, I do think you're right, though. With relievers, it's really hard to find ones that are consistently good. They kind of seem to have kind of years where there's, you know, up and down, the kind of variance just because they don't throw that many innings. But yeah, I mean, you'd have to wonder how someone like Aaron Loop could go from being, you know, a guy last year with the Mets, his ERA was like below one. I mean, you could make the case last year that, you know, that he was, in terms of runs, you know, not allowing runs, he was like the best reliever last year. And Raisel Iglesias, you could make a case, was one of the best closers in baseball last year. And then for them to fall apart like that this year is just hard to explain. And you don't know. And is it because the pitching coaches haven't really helped them, find their stuff or utilize it properly, or, you know, pitch sequencing, that kind of thing? Is what is broken? You know, are the Angels tipping pitches? You know, we've seen that with Peguero. We even heard about that with Otani in New York. I mean, what's kind of the biggest issue here? And I don't know the answer. I really don't know why these guys have struggled as much as they have. I really don't. And I think obviously they don't either, or else they probably would have fixed it by now. But it is a tough situation. You're right. I just think that I thought it made sense because these guys did have strong track records and generally, you know, they've been pretty good consistently throughout their careers. But for them to all, you know, have rough years together at the same time after all getting the new contracts from the Angels has really hurt this team a lot. And, it's definitely an issue they got to fix going forward.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I guess it shows that you do have to have some depth. You just can't always just spend money and hopefully that fixes the issue, whatever issue it is, whether it's, again, the bullpen, starting rotation, infield, whatever. But again, All-Star weekend is upon us. All-Star break is upon us. Home Run Derby is Monday. We are recording this before the draft, so we're actually on Sunday. But the Home Run Derby has some big names in it. I'm going to put you on the spot, Rhett. Who is going to win this home run derby?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, it's hard to go against Pete Alonso just because the way he's won it in the past and he's just so built for it. But I'm going to go with Kyle Schwarber.
Oh, okay.
He's just such a big guy in his swing. He generates so much power. I was watching him yesterday. He hit a home run on a pitch that was so low that he fell to his knee when he hit the home run. It was like Adrian Beltre back
Beltre.
Yeah. He just has so much raw power. And he's such a big guy. I think he's built for it more. And so is, you know, Alonso's a big dude too. Like, I think it's tougher for, you know, a guy like, Jose Ramirez, just cause he's just kind of a smaller guy to be able to do that. Cause just so many, you know, big swings over such a short amount of time, just the endurance it takes to do that and the strength, people don't realize just how tiring that is. So I do think that Alonso probably should be the favorite just because he's done it twice or he's won it twice. And his pitcher that he's had throw to him too is incredible. Like, every pitch is like right down the middle.
And he's even a different organization now. I heard, but he's bringing him back for the home run derby.
Probably gets a nice share of the winnings.
But
yeah, I mean, I'm going to go with Schwarber. I just think that the guy has a lot of power. And right now he's been hot for the last couple months just with the home run stroke. So big dude, I'm going to go with the big guy and go with Schwarber.
Okay, so if you could put any six guys in the field, they have to be current. Healthy, non-healthy, that doesn't matter, but they have to be current MLB players. What six guys would you put in your dream home run derby?
Six guys. I mean, Ohtani for one. I mean, definitely want to see Ohtani just because, you know, it's so much fun the way he hits BP. It just is crazy. I mean, of course, I'd always wanted to see Trout. I don't know if I put him among the six right now, but I mean, a Trout home run derby would be awesome. He's never done it and certainly isn't going to do it this year with his back.
Yeah.
I mean, Giancarlo Stanton's a guy that has, you know, massive power, the exit velocities, and so does Aaron Judge. So those two guys would be guys I'd love to see just because they're sitting big dudes with, like, crazy power. I mean, Schwarber obviously is a guy that I said this year has been pretty incredible. Let me think of anybody else.
Need two more.
Two more. Let's see here. Who's a big power hitter that would be? I'm trying to think of who else I'd want in there. Buxton actually has some pretty crazy power for being kind of a skinnier guy. Mm-hmm. This year, his power has been really fun. And I covered Byron. I love watching him play. He's more fun in the outfield, but it'd be pretty cool to see him in the Derby just because you don't see it. You know, you don't think of him being a power hitter. But I think I saw a stat where over his last 162 games, he has like 55 home runs.
It's
because he's hurt so much, you don't realize it. But, yes, I mean, I think I'd throw Byron in that list maybe. Let's see here. Who else would be kind of in that mix? Do I have any who's leading the league in ISO? Oh, you were on Alvarez.
Alvarez.
Yeah, I think Judge would be Schwarber in there for sure. But, yeah, I mean, Yordan Alvarez is the guy I forgot for sure. That's why I'd love to see Yordan Alvarez in it.
Yeah, he's definitely putting up a major major numbers so far this first half of the season for sure. And talking about Ohtani, and then obviously Ohtani's also starting at DH. And one other question real quick is that, and it kind of came to mind, Ohtani MVP doing some crazy stuff again this year that he did last year. Is there, and I ask you because I know you vote on awards. I don't know if you're going to vote on MVP this year, but I know you do in the past, but is there kind of any Ohtani fatigue you feel like where Judge, if he gets close to that 61 mark and Ohtani still is doing what he's doing, but you know, 61 and 61, especially in New York, is there any chance that it goes to like Judge in the MVP voting?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, there's a little bit of that fatigue, and also the fact the Angels just haven't really been very good again this year might add to that, and just the fact that Judge does play in New York. I think that could maybe play a little bit of a role into it. We'll kind of just see how the rest of the season goes. I mean, if Ohtani continues to go on a tear like this, it's going to be hard to ignore. And I do know voters love to look at, you know, war totals and that kind of stuff. And if he continues to pitch like this and hit like that, he's just going to put up the most war by anybody. So it's going to be tough to like pick somebody else in terms of just the value that he creates in terms of that. But you're right. If Judge, you know, goes on a home run tear and gets into the 60s on a team that's, you know, going to have easily over 100 wins, that narrative could definitely take hold. I don't vote for the MVP this year. If I had one for the first half, I would vote Ohtani just because of what he's been able to do. But, you know, we'll see how it goes second half. There's still a lot of baseball to be played. And it'll be, you know, interesting. Those two are definitely the top two candidates right now.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun race. I guess that's one thing for the Angel fans to kind of watch as the season goes on is that race, though, the MVP race, because the wild card race right now, unless I said, unless the
miracle,
move,
I mean,
yeah.
Nationals, obviously, when they won the World Series, they had a tough start. It wasn't this deep into the season, but turned it around. The Braves last year turned it around after the trade deadline. So teams have done it. It's just we haven't really seen any signs of this changing or any real reason to believe it, but you never know. It's baseball, but so far, it's not looking good.
Is it something as simple as just if the offense, for whatever reason, clicks in the second half, but your bullpen's the same, your like production-wise, bullpen's the same, your defense production is the same, your starting rotation production is the same, will that make a huge difference, you think, for the Angels? Or is it something like everything needs to improve a little bit? Or is it just the offense?
Everything needs to improve a little bit, but I do think the offense, to me, is the biggest thing. I mean, that was when they were good. Earlier in the year, they were, among the league leaders in runs scored. And I think they had the most home runs in baseball for quite a while there. And so I think they were, kind of being led by their offense, which, made sense at the time. I said, when you look back at it with Ward hitting the way that he was and Trout and Ohtani and Rendon and even Walsh, that was a pretty top, pretty fearsome top of the lineup there. But now it just isn't quite the same. But if they can get the other bats going, Marsh, I know it's homered in back-to-back games. I know they were in blowouts, but maybe he starts to click a little bit more, and Renjifo continues to click, and maybe they get Ward back, kind of getting back going and see what they have in Adele. And it's a lot of ifs, but if some of the things do click, you're right, and the offense does get better, that's how I think they'll get better in the second half if the offense picks it up. And maybe it will against, teams that aren't as good. They have played a lot of really good teams over the stretch too, and continuing on playing the Braves next is not going to be easy. But when they, they're playing the A's or playing the, the Royals or, teams like that, maybe they'll have a better showing and maybe get the offense going. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see and kind of, at this point, they're such a tough spot and just the confidence levels and stuff. I can't imagine they're very high right now with the way that things have been going.
So last question before I let you go, Red, again, follow him at Red Bollinger on Twitter, MLB beat writer for the Angels. Would you let Jeff Fletcher write a book about your life?
Ooh, I don't know. No, I don't think anyone would really want to read. of course. I mean, Jeff knows so much about me now. I've been on the beat and traveling together. I think I don't know who else could do it any better. Maybe my mom or dad. They're not very good writers. Like me. I'm just kidding. I'm excited for Fletch and this book coming out on Tuesday. And I said he's been talking about it a bunch. And I know that, mentioned in the back of the book there, I think, just in terms of acknowledgments from being in there. And I know that Sam Blum has a cameo in the book.
Yeah. Dropped an F-bomb. That's great.
Yeah, because the Ohtani home run in Seattle. So, yeah, I actually haven't read the book fully yet, but I really am looking forward to and certainly lived through a lot of it and seeing a lot of those Ohtani things and certainly have read Jeff's stuff, And so, yeah, I'm excited for him, and it is pretty cool. I know that fans can learn a lot about Ohtani. I know you've listened to the book, so it is cool. And someday maybe I'll write a book, too. Maybe I'll write it about Ohtani's season this year.
There you go. It could be a sequel.
Season in MLB history, the Shohei Ohtani 2022.
Reds and start on a sequel right now.
Right? Yeah. So, we'll see.
All right, Red. Thank you very much again. Enjoy the All-Star game. I know you're covering the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game, so have fun with that. I know it's work, but still it's going to be pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Stuff like that. So have fun with that. And thanks again for jumping on. So obviously Rhett did not get the prediction on the Home Run Derby, right? But I have a feeling a lot of people would have picked Alonso or, maybe Schwarber like Rhett did. But Juan Soto, again, puts on a show with Julio Rodriguez in that last round. A lot of fun, and it definitely seems like the crowds were packed there at Dodger Stadium with everyone pushing and shoving to try to get those home run balls. That's always an exciting time of the year, and honestly I do like it more than the All-Star game. With that being said, the All-Star game is going to be Tuesday again at Dodger Stadium, and we'll see what happens there. But news coming out of the press conferences today at Dodger Stadium for the All-Star game, and probably the biggest announcement for the All-Star game, is that Shohei Ohtani will be leading off and DHing for the AL this season. But unlike last season, it sounds like he declined to pitch this time around, seeing that the Angels have him scheduled to start off the series against Atlanta on Thursday, and he wanted to keep himself fresh for that, which was pretty cool to hear. So he is turning down the opportunity to pitch in the All-Star game. He's still, again, playing DH or starting at DH. And honestly, I would think he would get probably 2 to 3 at-bats for the All-Star game, seeing that he's not pitching. So that's cool. So again, if you don't see Ohtani pitch, you know why. Not a coach's decision. It was an Ohtani decision. And it's kind of pretty cool to hear that he's doing it because he is looking forward to the start of the second half and wants to be 100% when the Angels take on Atlanta on Thursday in Atlanta. So that was one of the bigger things that came out of the press conferences today at Dodger Stadium just ahead of the All-Star game. Another big announcement that happened during the All-Star festivities, if you will, was that the Angels put Mike Trout on the IL due to his back injury that he's sat out the last 4 games for the Angels. Now, because of this All-Star break and this long stretch, right now he is planning to come back once he is eligible to come back, and that would be Saturday. So I guess it's good timing to do it. He would only miss Thursday and Friday's game, plus the 4 that he missed coming into the break, but only miss 2 after the break. So I guess if there is a time to put yourself on the IL, I guess now is the time. But it definitely is kind of concerning for myself seeing Trout with these kind of injuries. And like I talked to Jeff Fletcher, it does seem like Trout is obviously getting a little older, and no one really knows how he is going to age, how his body's going to age. We would love to hear and see that Mike Trout is, you know, an all-class, all-world athlete, and the you know, him getting older is going to be a little bit slower, but you never really know. Sometimes it hits guys quicker than normal. I mean, one of the things that I fear for Mike Trout, because of it's happened before, you look at what happened with Ken Griffey Jr., my favorite player growing up. You know, I know he's not an Angel, but he was still one of my favorite players growing up. And it just seems like once he got bit by that injury bug as he got over 30, it just never seemed to be the same. And not saying that's what's going to happen with Trout, but for myself, that is kind of like in the back of my mind. Like maybe this is the time where he starts getting a little more injury prone. And maybe we'll see him move to a corner outfield spot next season because of that. But there's a lot of baseball to be played, and we'll see what happens when he gets back. But definitely a thing I'm going to watch for the rest of this year. And quite honestly, probably I think what people are going to look at for the rest of Mike Trout's career. So like I said, Trout on the IL, but Trout did commit to playing in the World Baseball Classic next spring in late March for Team USA. And not only that, he will be a captain for Team USA, which is pretty cool. He has not participated in that tournament that I am aware of. But if you ever watch any of the WBC games, those crowds are crazy. It feels like there's a whole different type of energy to those games compared to Major League games. And even like I'm talking about like Major League playoff games. It just seems like the WBC vibe is even greater than an ALDS kind of thing. So that's going to be really, really cool to see. I believe the USA's first couple games are going to be out in Arizona. So it's local for us Southern California people to get out there and watch. It's going to be the end of March. So you're looking at it's butting up right against spring training. So if you're planning to go to spring training in late March, there's a good chance Trout will not be there because he's playing with Team USA. But that also means you can go right down the street in Phoenix and check out a game once that tournament starts. So that was pretty cool. I'm really interested to see how Trout performs in a bigger stage like that. Unfortunately, the Angels have not been able to put Trout on a huge stage like that. So we'll see him. Granted, it's not the playoffs. Granted, it's not with an Angel uniform on. But it is something where he's going to be in a huge stage with a bunch of people watching, both in person and on television. And it's going to be really cool to see how Trout performs in that environment. So that is going to be next season's WBC happening in March of 2023, to keep an eye out for that. Other than that, Angels bring back Phil Gosselin. He got claimed off of waivers, so we'll see where he fits in with this team once we get back from the All-Star break. Like you heard Rhett say, Fletcher's planning to be back soon. He is still with the Salt Lake Bees right now. They're taking, they have like their all-star break, so they're not playing this week. I think their last game was Sunday, and Fletcher had two hits, I believe, in that game. So once they get back from their break at the end of this week, we'll see if Fletcher's going to be with the major league team or still maybe a couple games with the Salt Lake Bees. And then when he does come back, where is he going to fit in? And we talked about that with Rhett. So again, if you guys have a comment about the last two interviews, either with Jeff Fletcher or this one with Rhett Bollinger, please call in 951-384-0810 and we'll play it on the next podcast. I want to thank Rhett Bollinger for jumping on the podcast again. He's always had time for this podcast. Same thing with Jeff Fletcher. I was going to ask Sam Blum to jump on as well, but he was on about 3 weeks ago. So I, you know, it was kind of soon, but I am hoping to get all three of them, either all on at once or individual interviews once the season is over and once the Angels offseason starts. So last thing I'm going to leave you with is obviously there has been the draft going on, and I think them moving it to All-Star Weekend or All-Star Week was a really, really cool move. And putting it on Sunday, like prime time, was a cool move. I found myself watching more of the draft than I ever have before. And I find myself kind of being intrigued about who goes where and who the Angels pick up. So with the very first pick in their draft, with the 13th pick overall, the Angels pick Zach Nato at shortstop from Campbell University. And from everything I'm just seeing right now as far as interviews and like kind of like a vibe and all that stuff from him, he seems very flashy, very, very confident of himself. But what I'm reading about him as a player, he is going to be a shortstop. He is going to be a shortstop. And normally when you draft guys that are shortstops in high school or college, there is that tendency to move him from different position because you put your best athlete at shortstop when you're in high school or college, but when you get to the pros, that might not be the position from you. You might move to second base or you might move to third. You look at Jeremiah Jackson. He's playing a lot of second base. You look at Warren Blakely. He's playing a lot of third base. So, and both these guys got drafted as shortstops, but Zach has seems to have the skills, the arm and all that stuff to stay at shortstop. He is a college player, so he is a little bit closer to major league ready. The Angels did not have a second pick, so for the first day of the draft, they were done. The second day of the pick, the second day of the draft, you have rounds 3 through 10. And with that, Angels went very pitcher heavy. Out of those picks, they went 4 pitchers and one guy labeled as a two-way player. So we'll see how Dylan Phillips from Kansas State develops as a pitcher or as a hitter. But the big name they got in the second day of the draft was the third round pick with the 112th overall pick, Ben Joyce from Tennessee. And if you, that name rings a bell, if that name makes you think, oh, I think I've seen that before, you probably have. He was a pitcher for Tennessee. He sits normally, I think I saw from like 96 to like 99 is where he sits. And he has on occasion touched 105 in baseball games. So that is something very rare and very exciting for Angel fans to see. We'll see how the control is, because in this league, in this development process, this ecosystem, if you will, it seems like every guy can catch up to heat. Maybe not 105 heat, but every guy can catch up to heat. It's if you can place it where you want. It's going to be the biggest issue. But you look at what the Angels did on the second day of the draft, or even two, the first day if you count Zach, there is a lot of college players. Actually, all of them are college players. And to me, that signals that Perry is trying to get guys that are close to the major league level right now. You know, typically, if you go after a high school kid, you're looking at 5 to 6 years of development. Just, I mean, you draft a kid at 18, you know, he's not fully developed yet. He's not even really grown into his body much. But if you start drafting these guys that are out of college, 23, 24 years old, they have played at high level, and especially the Tennessees and the Auburns and the Oklahoma State, like high-end college baseball. And they've played against other major league type players, and they're a little more further along in development. So some of these guys, don't be surprised if you see them make serious noise or like are on the brink of breaking with the team in maybe late 23 or early 24. And if you have high school kids, that's not the case. So it definitely looks like Perry's trying to build depth for now with college players that are going to be ready to play sooner rather than later. You know, with the high school kid, you can always develop them, and maybe they end up being superstars because they're so athletic as a young kid and you're able to just develop them how you want. But with college people, with college guys, you know, the ceiling might not be as high, but the floor is not as low either. They're more of your everyday type of players in the major leagues. And, you know, high school kids are boom or bust. You know, you have a lot of high school kids that make it big and are these new big superstars. And then there's a lot of high school kids that never get out of double A ball. With college, you know, there's a good chance these guys are in double A competing very well. I mean, look at the pitchers that the Angels got last year competing in double A. They're all doing very, very well. And with some of these position players and pitchers, you can expect the same thing from them. So the rest of the draft, rounds 11 through 20, are going to be on Tuesday. So maybe as you're listening to this, they are finishing up the picks. But definitely you have to like what their idea of their draft strategy is this year. Again, they went after some pitchers, but they also went after some position needs, some first baseman, an outfielder, and a handful of pitchers. So far, it's not 20 pitchers out of 20 picks, that which is good, but they're not ignoring the pitching situation at all either, which I think is always a plus. Those pitchers are always going to be beneficial. Even if it's not for your team, they are great trade chips down the line. So the Angels are not ready to compete yet, and I think a lot of people know it, but if this draft, 20, or actually they're going to have 19 picks because they didn't have a second round pick, out of 19 picks, if you can get three or four guys that are competing at the major league level in their career, that is a good draft. So just keep that in mind. Not every person from this draft is going to make it big, but if you can get three or four guys that can make it to the major leagues and don't need to be all-stars, they need to be just, you know, a utility player, a solid starter or something like that. If you can get three or four of those guys out of this draft, it will be a very, very good draft. So just keep that in mind. Just because one of these players don't make it, or three or four of these players don't make it, that's fine. That's what happens. Baseball is a hard sport. If you can get just a handful that can make it, and they don't even need to be all-stars, but if they can make it and contribute to a major league team, this draft was a success. So our next podcast will be recorded Wednesday night, right before the Angels get back to action against the Atlanta Braves. We're probably going to do an Instagram live for that. We'll talk a little bit about what happened at the All-Star game, looking ahead to the second half of the season when the Angels take on the Atlanta Braves to start it off. If we get any voicemails, we'll play them. If not, we'll jump on Instagram Live and take your questions there. So make sure you are on or around your phone on Wednesday night. Usually I jump on around 7 o'clock. Again, follow us at @Halo_Haven on Instagram. We'll post it there. I'll probably end up posting what time and all that stuff on there. So again, follow us at @Halo_Haven, and definitely follow Rhett Bollinger at Rhett Bollinger on Twitter, and at Jeff Fletcher OC, I believe is his Twitter handle as well. Follow those guys on Twitter just because obviously they are the first ones to know all the news. They tweet it, you see it. They are on top of their game. Yes, it is Jeff Fletcher OCR on Twitter. So thank you for Jeff. Thank you for Rhett taking time out. I really, really appreciate it. And that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the All Angels Podcast. We'll be back with the Instagram Live Wednesday night. So definitely check out for that. And I'm your host, Daniel Garcia, and this has been another edition of the All Angels Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.